Mi Manda Niganin Podcast. Mi Gwech Bezindamek.
Ani Bojau Kinoea, Lishki Hinibagokbe, Danish Nabe Noswen Allen, Kiri Dishnakonigo, Makwan Dodem, Girabaching Donjaba, Mishnabe and Dow. Niganin Services, Miwa Pokanaswin Project, Nonjanaki, Shihir and Dunkazan, Kitchen and Dunmum Piwiyan. Welcome, everybody, to the Niganin Podcast. And I'm really excited to talk about land-based living, food security, our Kinamogiwin, and I'm joined today by Eric Brinkelson. So, Eric, can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
I sure can. Thanks for having me today. Eric Brinkelson, Jaganashi Nazwin, Pawadin Megwadoda, Niganin Jiraki. I was going for, my name's Eric Brinkelson. I'm a settler in Sault Ste. Marie today, and I work for Niganin and I have for the last 3 years or so. And I guess first time on the podcast, I've heard a few of them. I've helped make a few of them back in the day, and our producer, John, shout out to him, is running full speed with that now and doing way better than we ever thought we could. So happy to be here today.
Yeah. Definitely need to thank John for all his help to do this. And so what's your role now? What's your current, what do you do with Niganin?
The longer answer is I'm transitioning from a title of executive assistant to the director to something to do with operations and business relations and planning and writing and communications. But that's a long title. So just call me Eric, I guess, for now. But Kinna McGavin, the partnership with Thessalon and all that stuff will be part of it. Our IFC and a few other things that kind of link into that down the road too.
Right on. I feel like instead of not knowing, it's more of everything and anything needed. Or I know anything I'm involved in is usually you're connected in some way. So yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about Kinamogiwin, and then I'm excited about food security stuff. But before we get there, I guess, can we share, do we know what the word Kinamogiwin means? But first, for maybe our listeners already know, or some might not?
Yeah. It comes from the Anishinaabemowin language or Ojibwe language, depending on how you refer to it. It's all the same thing. It doesn't translate right into English. I know it's about learning from the land, taking everything the land gives you and coming back out with some lessons. The word teacher's in there, the word land's in there in terms of how you break up the word phonetically. But it's really about learning from the land and what those lessons that they teach it, the land can teach you.
Sometimes when I see it, I see it referred to like schools or learning spaces. And I like how for Niganin, we do use it with land base or being on the land. And is this, because I know it's kind of a name, just like Minaba Mazda is a name, we have Kinamogiwin. Is it a place? Is it a program? Is it what is it? What are we encompassing it at Niganin?
It's a good question. I think it'll set the tone for the rest of our conversation real nicely. Kinamogiwin is a place, and it's also a thing, and it's tangible and it's intangible. I'm gonna throw it back to you to talk about this, the start of Kinamogiwin at Niganin and the land-based camps that we ran through our Minnow program. But Kinamogiwin is a partnership we're doing with Thessalon right now in terms of the site itself. So it's out in Thessalon, the former bio center. But Kinamogiwin can be anywhere. Kinamogiwin is learning from the land and doing it in a way that's got traditional cultural significance. So if you walk us through the early years, I can tell you what we're doing, I guess, today. And hopefully that's a good episode for the listeners.
Right. So my recollection, way back when I started with Niganin, I was brought on as a Minaba Mazda facilitator, and always appreciate that spirit-to-spirit connection. Of course, this is pre-COVID, so we were meeting in person, which we're back to again. And always really good to have those conversations together and learn from each other. But so much more grounding, I guess, or the feeling of being on the land versus like in a room, in a meeting space or in a building, right? So what we wanted to do was have land-based camps, and the, I know we've had them previously, but the ones that really stick out for me are the four that we had in 1 year. They were May, June, July, August in communities along the North Shore. We visited Atikmekshing, Sagamuck, Thessalon, and Mississauga. And it was a week long, open to families, and just such a good time. Like the conversations that were had, the connections made, learning about living together, sharing with each other, helping each other, and being outside, being, you know, connected to the earth. All that stuff is so important. And recognizing that, I know Niganin has moved ahead with making that part of our regular way to connect with the folks in our communities. So I believe, and you might be able to explain this part better because I'm less connected. I'm not directly involved with Minnewabasada anymore. But I know we have our land-based detox services as well. And that was based on our lived experience with doing those camps and understanding what actually helps our people, what they want or what they're asking for. And so the connection, the steps from that and growing from there to Thessalon, that's the part you'll have to fill us in on a bit. I'm less aware of those intricacies.
Yeah, it's a good time to jump in. We were at a board meeting of the North Shore Tribal Council, Mamwezwin, April 2022. We were talking about food security efforts and food sovereignty efforts. Potentially purchasing a farm and going at it in terms of the goals the board's laid out for us as Niganin Services and making a change to the way people get their food and how our food banks operate and some things like that. So that's where it comes from, really. It was a chance to go out to the greenhouse to see it with the chief and council of the day and come up with a partnership where the operating partner, they own the land there, the owner of the site, and that's their asset as a community. But it's huge. It's very expensive to operate and turn the lights on, let alone do the renovations we have. So over the last year and a half or so, we've been updating greenhouses, updating concrete, and we've got five ready to go that we're now growing food in. So when I say food, I'm talking tomatoes and corn and cucumbers and anything that you would put in the salad and a stew. We're going to do some strawberries and fruits and stuff as well. And there's some significance to our community consultations and what we learned from talking with the communities, why we're going to do it that way. But all in all, there's going to be five greenhouses growing about 30 different crops, fruits and vegetables. And there's also some farm fields out there. So it sets up a chance to stretch your seasons and use the greenhouses and the fields together. So that kind of covers the last 2 years. And right now it's a bit of a construction site, but I think what you're going to see is that essence of Kinabageh would come out pretty soon where it becomes a place where any of the communities can come to. Anybody that wants to just see the land and be on the land and have a place to go and kind of retreat to can come. And we're hoping that being the closest community and being the owners of the asset and everything, that Thessalon is leading the way that way too. So we can talk about Kinabageh, I guess, as a place. It's really a solution in a way. Sort of going back to the name, our conversation with the name, it's about learning from the land, but it's also about a different way forward. It's about changing the way our social lives are, making it sustainable, and finding a place where people can go to heal and do it in an indigenous led way. So, I know that's a mouthful, so maybe we can break that down a bit.
Right. Well, I was thinking about how much work it takes to grow all these things, right? So I had a few questions. One was about how the focus of things that go in soups and salads, how that was. I think you sort of mentioned it, that it was from community. And so some of, or maybe how Niganin came to move forward, recognizing this is a need, right? And I know a little bit about that way back. They've been working for years, I believe over 10 years, supporting what we, I guess, might know as things called food banks, but I know Niganin calls them nutrition cupboards because they're for anybody. They're not, trying to get rid of the stigma of whether you want or need something, just that this is a shared space, common food and support like that is available for anybody, right? Growing to conversations we've had with communities along the North Shore of like what they need or what they want and where they see helping their own community members have better access to healthy food, right? That was based on studies that Niganin did and also trying to support communities through COVID when, I like how you said, when in a previous conversations we've had where like we're fighting over toilet paper, how are we making sure our communities have access to food in a secure way, right? Anyway, getting back to how you meet that need or solve that problem and working with the BioCenter, which is such a great facility, like you said, and I can't wait to see with all the upgrades and stuff what comes out of there. How do you, that takes a lot of work. And so who's doing that work or who are we hoping? I know you said you, in partnership with Thessalon, hoping that they lead the way. And I know communities are doing their own work as well. And so what are some of the hows of that?
Yeah, for sure. We can, I guess if we talk about just food sovereignty in itself and how that relates to the site, there's five or six things that we pulled out of those community consultations. So going back to, I guess, your days as special projects before you moved over to Cognoswin, and we know you'll be coming back here soon, so we're happy to know that we're going to get to go back into the communities with you leading the way. But we learned about salads and stews and meals that people are familiar with. Nobody wants microgreens and kale, I guess, is the flip side of that. We want meals that we grew up on, home-cooked meals, kind of comfort food and things that you eat every day. But we want it to be nutritious and we want it to be attainable and not at a distance that is so great that you have to buy your food a month at a time and it goes bad. The main thing of our food strategy is to support a sustainable livelihood. And there's a lot that goes into our livelihood. So we use the social determinants of health to kind of guide that. If you think of everything outside of your main health, your physical health, that's basically what your social health is. So we want to prioritize nutrition. We want to get rid of the unhealthy diets that we do know are kind of what you get if you go to a food bank as it is today or what you think of it as traditionally. And in removing that stigma that comes with the word food bank, we want to transition to nutrition cupboards and talk about how we can remove that distance between our providers and our communities so that while we can't have a community grocery store in all seven communities, we can have something that's alternative to that. One of the coolest things that we learned through those consultations was that our communities don't want food aid. They don't want inappropriate food dumping. It's not that we want to go get whatever's left over and say, here, go nuts. It's good for 2 days. That's not what it's about. It's about doing it the right way. And that's really what the greenhouses offer, is like a way to reduce the dependency on grocery stores and corporations that run them. The two or three companies that grow the food in Canada, and then the two or three companies that supply those grocery stores the food are Maple Leafs or Schneider's or Dole's. Or, you know, they're great. They make great food, but where is it coming from? And we don't know that. So it's really cool to
that. Yeah. Even what you're talking about makes me excited about like, ooh, are we talking about like heirloom vegetables? So not just like one species or whatever, but getting back to the variety and seed banks and which then my mind, you know, expands beyond what is possible or initially happening maybe in these greenhouses. But like, what about traditional foods and how are we ensuring that foods and medicines are protected, like beyond, like in the greater territory or treaty area or province or country.
That's amazing.
I know, food sovereignty, right? Yeah, you said food sovereignty and that got me all jazzed up again.
Well, that's the amazing part of the partnership with the greenhouses is that you can do that. And this really sets the table for us to treat it like a business and treat it like an enterprise so that we can actually make it feasible and sustainable and work with partners and government and nonprofits, charities, the private sector, anybody that's a like-minded partner that wants to either fund us or give us expertise or work together towards our common goals. The big thing is without the greenhouses and the fields and the partnership, we would be stuck with buying a farm. So the opportunity and the potential here is exactly how you described it. Take stuff that's being affected by climate change and put it in a greenhouse until we can figure out a way to keep it sustainable back outside, or bring it to the communities in abundance so that what is affected by climate change is still fulfilling the needs of the community without wasting and that kind of stuff.
I know some communities have done work in the past too around seed banks and their own community gardens or their own protection, the areas important to their community, harvest areas, you know, like plants and stuff, right? And so I'm really thrilled to think about this big network that could happen, right? I mean, step by step, because communities are focused on the things that need to happen now and they have their own plans and stuff. But yeah, I'm really excited about the potential or opportunity, you know, of all working together. I can't imagine like how powerful would that be if we're all working with a broader goal or a common goal. And like you said, cutting out the capitalist food system that doesn't do us any favors.
It's almost like part of the regional capacity of a tribal council, and what being able to work for the tribal council is, it allows you to do that when you have relationships with the communities where you can say, okay, what are you guys doing on your own and how can we enhance you? So it's not one size fits all. So we have communities that have community gardens and strong programs. So certain months of the year, their community is fed. And then there's certain months of the year where they're not. And then we have smaller communities that are going to the neighboring municipalities and using their food banks. So conversations to be had about partnerships, but there's probably a way where we can feed our own people utilizing the resources that are now available. So it's been 2 years of planning and it's starting to come to fruition now that we're actually growing food. And I guess two of the greenhouses right now, through the last three, I'll have heat in them here soon. And then it goes from there.
So you're growing stuff now. What's growing?
Right now we got a whole bunch of varieties of tomatoes, just about every kind of kale and lettuce. And they call them brassicas, as I'm told by the growing people. And then we've got some peas and beans, anything along, I guess that'll grow on a vine, on a trellis. We're trying out broccolis and cauliflowers. We've got carrots and celery and just about anything growing. Maybe if we do this right, we can have our producer Don shoot some videos or shoot some pictures up with the podcast as well to really show that off. But yeah, so right now we're testing. We've got some issues with aphids we've come across and overcome. And I think we saw a mouse or two running around when it started to get cold. So not that they were in the greenhouse, but figuring out all those little challenges before we go full go and before we scale up and do the tech piece. So right now we're watering manually. We have the heat on each greenhouse that we can set individually, but it's very rudimentary. So taking the lessons we learned now at a small scale and then going up from there.
Right. And then I'm imagining this isn't coming out of thin air, like you're having an idea out of your imagination. Like are there other spaces you visited or learned from other communities doing this work maybe? Or
yeah, we had indigenous work? We did go to Rama First Nation. They've got a greenhouse set up. It's not as, I guess, commercial as what we have in terms of concrete and the size and the scale and everything. It's on grass. There's some beds in there, and it really just shows you it's about hard work. The other one we went and visited is Harvest Algoma in Sault Ste. Marie, so tucked right in the city. They were able to pump out like 60,000 meals a year to like 70 agencies. And they're very much the same type of thing that we do, where they have a social administration board that has an Ontario Works office, and they have people that are hungry, and they have caseworkers that go and get the food. So we don't need that many steps. We we're happy to work direct with our people through our team. So it's a little nicer that way, but same idea. We've got people that are on Ontario Works and make hard decisions every month with their money. So if you get $1,000 and you've got $1,200 in bills and you haven't ate yet that month, it's not a good budget to have to figure out. And then you throw a dependent kid or children or maybe it's older adults or whoever else is in your family into that budget, and it becomes really tricky. So do you pay the rent or do you eat, right? That's the...
Yeah, or even factoring for a lot of our communities of like, how do you even get to the grocery store?
Yeah.
That's on top of just the food itself, right? Yeah, I'm thinking about or getting excited about the possibility of like, how would I, if food is happening and things are rolling out the way you want, like, I love the idea of locally grown food in my house. So what might that look like?
Yeah,
especially if I don't have to grow it. That's the key thing, is I'm way too lazy to grow my own food. I will admit that. But I do prefer things local versus that have come across the ocean or been shipped here, you know.
Yeah, I think the big thing is we've got all the tools at our disposal, I think, to distribute stuff already between the website and being able to connect with people online. And then the model that we developed with the Service Ontario trailer, where instead of having to go to an office that's in one spot in Northern Ontario or to your nearest city, the trailer comes to your community. So it may not be dropped off at your door, but once a week that service window can come through. And if it's predetermined on who's getting what and what needs to be packaged, and it makes our lives a little easier on the front side, it's really easy to come in and pick up what you need at a predetermined time and be good for your week or that kind of thing. So that's just one method. There's definitely home delivery methods that you see with the Chef's Plate and HelloFresh and some of the other food delivery methods that you're seeing come through mainstream alternatives to grocery shopping. So Walmart's delivering too in bigger cities, maybe not in the ones we're familiar with, but all of those things are solutions that we're going to figure out what fits our community, what fits the wants and needs of the people, and then deliver them. We know people can't be driving $200 worth of gas to get $100 worth of groceries to feed the people for 2 or 3 days. It just doesn't work. So again, Kennebec Game being a solution and an indigenous-led one, how do we do it differently? How do we do it sustainably? And how do we do it in a way that's feasible long-term? And I think bringing food to the community is the way to do it. In those consultations, and I think even going back to your initial ones, we've learned that people might not know how to use some of the fresh stuff. So we're exploring ways of putting meal kits together and actually providing meals in forms that are really easy to grab and feed people to try and make, I guess, an intervention in unhealthy diets as well as the whole food sovereignty effort goes around. It's really important that we don't just keep multiplying problems that we see with diets in our communities as well, right? It's a really cool opportunity to grow fresh food and then actually have people eat it.
I love that idea. I don't like to cook. I'm very upfront about that. But if I had something that could walk me through step by step, it would certainly help. Oh, that's really exciting. I can't wait till we have our own, that we're less reliant on outside supports or whatever, right? When we're as First Nations, as Anishinaabe, that doing it for ourselves and providing for our own people and having access as individuals to these things, which we used to have before impacts of colonization. That's really exciting to me, especially at this time, right? We have positive things happening in our communities and hopefully an increasing capacity of what First Nations are doing for themselves or collectively, and then this tying in, I don't know, just sounds very cool. Any other parts that I guess for our listeners, if you're interested in learning more or have ideas of how things we should consider, definitely keep an eye out on our social media, Facebook and Instagram. Check out our website, nikoadneen.com. Someone correct me if that is the wrong email address. And also reach out. You can email us, info@nikoadneen.com, with those ideas. What have we not mentioned that we should still share with our listeners?
I guess there's two things on the tip of my tongue. One is everything we've talked about today is fruits and vegetables, so that's not going to feed everybody a solid diet. So we got to figure out how we incorporate proteins, hunting, some traditional methods to gather proteins, I guess, and then the whole rest of the plate. How does that factor in? So we are having a summit at the end of February for anyone connected to distributing food in the communities. You're going to want to reach out to info@niganin.com, like Carrie mentioned. We're looking to gather anyone that's works in food delivery, I guess, in our communities. If you work at a food bank, if you give food to people through your job, we want you there. So we're going to talk about everything that's going on, but we're also going to map out the needs of our communities and talk about where we need to go with the strategy to create that food sovereignty plan going forward. So it's the last week of February. It starts on the 26th. It's going to be hosted in Sault Ste. Marie, or Mawating, as it should be called. And yeah, it's going to run the week. We're going to have some tours out at Kinemegewin at Thessalon on the last day of the Thursday of that week. It's the 29th. So if you want to reach out to me, it's Eric, E-R-I-K, at niganin.com as well. Might be a little quicker than hitting the info one, but either of them will get you to me at the end of the day, and we can connect you with the rest of the team to get you to be a part of that summit.
And if folks are interested in attending, just as like a listener, is that the invitation that you're, more of a participant that you're involved with?
Yeah, the intent is to gather anyone that plays a role in distributing food to community members in need. We want to attack the hungriest people in the communities first through a lot of these initiatives, but we understand that we need to talk to the people that are working with them on the front lines. So anybody that's interested in listening to the podcast this long, feel free to reach out and we'll see what we can do. But if you're a part of a food bank or if you're part of that ecosystem, we definitely want you there.
I do like that you did mention the food sovereignty piece beyond fruits and vegetables. And so in my brain, connecting with, I guess, land management, which sounds so jargonish, more of land responsibility or connection to where we are with things like hunting and stuff, as well as factoring in, like, does that include husbandry, or where I think that's the word, is it animal husbandry, when you
want to make some chickens?
Yeah.
I think you got it right, but it's part of it. I mean, it's all about what you can do with the capacity you have and figuring out some of those things on the business side, but the sky is the limit if we can get started. And I think if we can start feeding the hungriest people first, we'll really see a difference in the communities.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm excited. I'm pumped up and I'm looking forward to the food summit. So I really appreciate you spending some time with us and sharing about this, because we don't talk about it often enough. So I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, we can do a part two anytime, either Kinemegewin or food sovereignty. They seem to be hot topics right now.
For sure.
Cool.
Thanks for spending time with us, everyone, and look forward to connecting again. Meet Wedge.
Bama Pee.
Bama Pee.